Sunny skies at 82 degrees. Welcome to this Monday edition of Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. We begin with this. Family members of a Georgia Tech student shot and killed by campus police say there are many unanswered questions. Earlier today, the family alongside their attorney addressed the media. Bill Schultz is Scott Schultz's father.
Why did you have to shoot? That's the question. I mean, that's the only question that matters right now. Why did you kill my son?
Now, according to Georgia Tech police, Saturday night officers responded to a call of someone with a weapon, possibly a gun or knife. Now, there's video of the incident, and Scout Schultz is barefoot and confronted by officers. On the video, officers can be heard telling Schultz to drop the weapon. You can also hear Scout Schultz yell, "Shoot me." Chris Stewart is the family's attorney.
Why did you have
to? At the end of the day, there were two failures. That one officer who decided to take Scout's life, firing that shot when none of the officers were at the appropriate level of threat. And the other failure was Georgia Tech. They have confirmed that they don't give their officers tasers, which is insane. You're on a college campus. You're going to be dealing with kids that may be drinking, may be belligerent, may be not listening, maybe having a mental breakdown, and the only thing you equip your officers with is a gun.
Now, Scout Schultz was an engineering student at Georgia Tech and the president of Pride Alliance at the university. We'll have more on this on tomorrow's program. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation is investigating the shooting death. This is Closer Look.
Support for WABE comes from Rosie's Roofing and Restoration. Understanding the importance of a roof check after high wind storms and committed to roof repair so you can stay cozy and dry. Rosiesroofing.com. And from Reliable Heating and Air, a Trane dealer, a family company since 1978 offering heating and air, plumbing, electrical, and duct cleaning 24 hours a day. Learn more at ReliableAir.com.
When you're catching up on the day's news, the headlines are a good place to start. But to really understand the world and what's happening, you want the full story. All Things Considered takes the time to explore the details and differences to find meaning in the day's biggest stories. Stand with the facts. Listen every day. Join us weekday afternoons from 4 until 6:30 for All Things Considered here on 90.1 WABE.
Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. As always, I'm Rose Scott. You know, we haven't quoted the great Ralph Waldo Emerson on this program, but since he's credited with saying life is a journey, not a destination, it just seems fitting for Layla Hathaway. Now, since her self-titled debut album in 1990, it's been an incredible journey for this artist, and that includes five Grammys, and a slew of other awards. Oh, and by the way, Layla Hathaway makes time for mentoring students. Fresh off a concert here in Atlanta at the Fox Theater, before heading out, she's joining me in studio. Welcome.
How are you?
First of all, let me say this. I want purple locks.
Do it.
Should I do it?
Do it.
Just get on out there.
Be prepared to lose a couple, though.
Really?
You have to bleach and then make them purple. It's a lot.
But I don't want to bite your style.
It's all right. Purple is available to everyone.
All right. You know, I've talked to a lot of artists, and most of them love the touring, albeit grueling.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do it for so long, does it ever become too much for you?
Yes. It's too much right now, today. I love it, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. I wouldn't trade what I do for the world. But I definitely miss my bed and stove and television and my own TiVo programs and my own bathroom. I'm definitely homesick this time in a way I've never been.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I think I just moved, and I'm looking forward to unpacking my house. It's all in boxes. And 6.5 weeks on the road, it's a long time. Luckily, I'm out with my band, my friends, my mom. And so it's not too bad, but I do definitely miss home.
I asked the legendary Chaka Khan about touring. Take a listen to what she said.
my singing is like my therapy. Mm-hmm. You understand? If I'm not singing, I'll be in some trouble. Yeah, I need to sing. You understand? I love that communication, reciprocative love that goes between the audience and myself.
What is singing for you, Layla?
Yeah, it's a lot of that. It's super cathartic. It is a place of peace. It is a place of meditation. It's absolutely the most fun I have in a day, even on days where it's hard or it doesn't sound great or the people aren't interested or the money's not good or the room's not nice or the catering sucked. On those days when I'm able to make the sound for people and try to caress them with the sound, that is absolutely my therapy.
So how do you know when it's time for a break?
I get really sleepy. I sleep in the car at the parking lot of NPR.
I see. I wasn't going to bring that up, but I walked out. I walked out to the car. Yeah. You were gone.
I try to get a couple little snoozes. Right now, it's time for a little break. I need to disconnect for a moment. It's hard to know because my life is so much music. I live with it every day. I'm talking about it and doing it every day. If it's not something I'm doing every day, on the days I'm not doing it, I'm planning for when to do it again. And so in the last couple of years, I have made an effort to try and take a vacation, like for a week, and go somewhere far away. But still, I get phone calls on the vacation about when it's going to happen again. So looking forward to a vacation.
When you think back to 1990 and that debut album, can you even sum up how you've developed as an artist?
Nah.
Yeah.
It's weird. People say, what's the difference between your first album and this album? What's the difference between the last album and this album? Like, what's the difference between yesterday and today? Like, time. Mm-hmm. That's the difference, the evolution, the time, the space, the matter in between. I'm still the same girl. I mm-hmm. have evolved and stayed the same. You know what I mean? There are all these kind of esoteric concepts as to how to quantify things in the world. And I find, particularly with art and spirituality, for instance, there are a lot of people try to quantify that. It's very hard for me to do that. I mean, I know that I'm older. I hope that I'm wiser. I hope my voice has mellowed. I hope it's better. I hope I have retained a lot of the quality that I had at 20. I hope that it has gotten better. And, you know, I think the main difference is really just time.
Let's go back even further. When you were at the Berklee College of Music, did you think about all this?
I did. I thought about it every day.
Yeah.
I thought about, you know, what would my television show be about? What kind of clothes would I wear? Where would I go sing? You know, yeah, I thought about it a lot.
Do you remember the first time you went out on stage when you were a professional singer? I mean, you've been singing since you were little, but when you knew you were going to get a check, that first concert?
Not really. I kind of was always on this path. Mm-hmm. I do remember, you know, my first shows at school and feeling like, oh, there's a smoke machine and I'm wearing a dress.
You had a smoke machine, Layla Hathaway.
Well, they had one at Berklee. So, you know, there was smoke for the, you know, they were preparing us for the professional world. I don't remember. I just have always been on this trajectory.
You chose to, let's back up. You sang a classic by Anita Baker, Angel, and it just went, it was bananas. It was a smash. I just want to listen to it. Don't you just want to listen to this?
Yeah.
Here's a comment that I read. Flawless, just flawless, and her range. I passed out and woke back up still in vocal heaven.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah. I like when people use words like heaven when they associate my tone with heaven. That's a really good thing. That's a thing they don't even realize that they are doing. A lot of times, the three things most associated with my tone to me are heaven or some sort of spiritual mm-hmm. overrealm, food, you know, chocolate or Danish butter, and fabric, velvet or cashmere. So I get those three references a lot.
Chocolate, velvet, cashmere. I like mm-hmm. that. You have a lot of influences. obviously, you know, when we think about Donny Hathaway, the legend, and I've read where people call you the daughter of soul, and it was in her genes, and she was born to do this. What do you think about all that?
I think is that there's a truth to it. I mean, mm-hmm. both of my parents are musicians, mm-hmm. and I grew up with that influence, absolutely. Since I was probably 2 or 3 years old, I have been a student of music. So I definitely think there is something to it. Having said that, you know a lot of child doves that don't do the same thing mm-hmm. as their parents did. But I think for me, it has been such a natural evolution for me. And to have my parents meet at music school at mm-hmm. Howard, and my sister and I are both musicians. So I think there's something to be said about that.
Do you, or what have you taken from his approach to music, and just going back and listening to how he laid down tracks, how he composed?
I feel like the thing that I take from it the most, and I have said this from the beginning, is his honesty, his vulnerability. So the fact that, you know, I mean, a week does not go by that someone doesn't say to me, "Hey, I know this guy, he sounds just like your father." And I always feel like, no, he doesn't. But the thing that sets him apart from everyone was that joy and the pain in his voice, that vulnerability in his tone. And that's just honest. You know, you cannot relate that to people and have people feel it for 100 years without it being real and honest.
Can you record a song if you're dealing with pain or if you're upset?
You have to. That's a good time to record a song. That's, you know.
You know who else told me that? And people may be shocked. Tito Jackson, right here in this studio, said that.
Tito Jackson's a consummate musician. Yeah.
He said the best time to record is when you're upset because you're not in love anymore.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, in pain, that's where we grow, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting. I've been opening for Mary J. Blige this summer, and she is in a specific period of time right now that we can all see. It's really blown out and really in the press. And she is really thriving. And, you know, it's a sad thing, but it's a wonderful thing to watch someone break out of a shell and move and emote and vibe and evolve. But that's what happens when we're in pain. You know, those are the Here, My Dear.
Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, these records are the greatest I'm Out of Love record, or there's Alimony record, or Somebody Died record. These are the records that people really cling to because they understand that pain.
We have talked about on this program, is R&B dead? Because there was an article that came out that said R&B is dead.
I love those.
Yeah. What do you think about all that?
It's silly. I think it's silly. I don't think R&B is dead. I think that the radio is kind of dead in some ways. But rhythm and blues will always exist. It comes from a long, I mean, it's in the DNA of this country. So mm-hmm. it started in the fields as work songs. You will never erase that. That will never be dead. All of that music transitions down and then becomes the story of Black Americans in this country, and then subsequently Americans in this country. So you'll never erase that.
When we talk about pain, you also can look at the current climate of our nation right now. I mean, coming into the show, unfortunately, I had to do a news report about a young man that was shot and killed by the police. There's mm-hmm. a lot of sadness, a lot of turmoil. Some people say, you know, we're a nation divided. When all that is going on,
I love that we're a nation divided. I know. Somebody just figured that out in 2017.
Right. Well, yeah. Good point. Does that at all influence your writing?
It does. It does. And I tell people a lot about this record, the record that I have created, which is called Honestly, is indeed a resistance record. It's not a protest record. It's not a where have all the flowers gone record. It is a record which is me expressing myself creatively in spite of the climate in this country, which is in and of itself a mode of resistance. So it may not seem like a protest record, but it is absolutely meant to resist what is happening.
And when you are composing that and writing that, and then something else happens, is it easy for you to jump back into either another painful writing session or something happened or somebody gives you some ice cream and you're very happy again and let's write a happy song. How do you maneuver between all of those emotions?
It really just depends on how we are approaching a day. There are a lot of records that have been written or that I have sang that other people wrote that you wouldn't necessarily pick up on how deep the actual lyric is for us that wrote it or performed it. But it is meant to uplift you, you know what I mean? So the lyrics are relatable to you. But the record, I think, the job of the artist is to communicate what is happening in the world. And so we absolutely speak to that in one way or another.
You do a lot of collaborations with other artists, great producers. You like that?
I love it.
Yeah.
I think collaborations are the spice of, you know, what makes it work. You know, no man is an island. I think it's great for Prince to write everything or people to write everything. But even Prince collaborated with musicians. Mm-hmm. So it is a very collaborative effort. There's no band by itself. It's not one guy in a band, you know.
The last couple of years, we've lost a lot of legends,
yes.
So to speak.
Yes.
And I know people don't like to hear this word legacy. You've been performing for a long time. Do you think about your legacy at all?
I do. I think about my legacy in terms of wanting to present the greatest thing possible that I can. I think about my legacy because my name was a brand before I even got to the planet. And I hope that people associate it with greatness. So I hope that when you see Hathaway with music, that you know you don't have to worry about that. That's what the legacy should be, that was great, that they really tried to go above and beyond and deliver beautiful music that we can give our kids and they can give their kids and they can give their kids.
You know, when we started this segment, I talked about it's not necessarily the destination, but the journey. How's the journey been for you so far?
The journey has been sublime. You know, there have been days when I thought, oh, I wish I was on her journey, or I wish I was over there doing that. And I really feel like...
Really? Like what?
Well, you know, there was a time in my 20s. My record came out probably a year before Mary J. Blige's first record, mm-hmm. probably around the same time as Mariah Carey's record. I saw a lot of girls that were just kind of catapulted into the stratosphere, commercially sort of speaking. And there were times when I associate stuff with greatness, if mm-hmm. that makes any sense.
Sure.
There are moments, because I'm human, that I will look at Kylie Jenner and think, wow, this is her fourth billion-dollar home. What could I do to get my billion-dollar homes? What kind of greatness? You know, you start to think about stuff and where do you get your stuff? And that is where the ego comes into play. So there are moments, because I'm a human being, that I have a break with my spiritual self and I think that the stuff equates greatness. But I wouldn't trade my path for the world.
How do you bring yourself, how do you land that ego then? How do you bring yourself back down?
I just start singing. And I know that I'm the greatest of all time at what I do because there's nobody else like me and there's no one else in that line. Nothing else will exist like me throughout the strand of time. I still want stuff. Don't get it twisted.
What you want later?
Don't get it twisted.
What you want?
I would like a villa. I don't know what those are. I think that sounds like at least 5,000 square feet. I would like a villa. There are some cars I'd like. I like toys. I'm into stuff.
But
ultimately, I would sing with nothing. This is what I'm supposed to do. I recognize I'm on my path, and I'm okay.
You still want that TV show?
Oh, sure. I would love to have a television show. I think it would be so much fun.
We could do one together.
Yes. Are you a comedian?
Some say yes. Mm-hmm. My producer, my engineer behind you are laughing. We could work on that.
All right.
Leyland Rose.
All right. I'm sorry. I can't have a rose. I feel like Kendrick Lamar. I'm the Sammy. You got to get your own show, Rose.
Well, thanks, Layla Hathaway.
I'm sorry. You know, that's that ego. That's that ego. But
And you know, St. Louis, we have a connection there. And,
yes.
You know, no. Layla Hathaway, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Being so gracious with your time. I really appreciate
it.
I didn't even ask you to sing, see?
Thank God, because you hear all this frogginess happening in here. I'll be glad not to sing for a week. It'd be nice.
Best of luck to you.
Thank you so much.
From the moment I wake each morning, I can't wait to see you smiling. It makes my whole world, oh. If anything were to happen to you, I just don't know what I would do. You are my everything, oh.
It's the way you whisper to my heart.
Talk to me, baby.
And I knew it from the very start.
Hey, yeah, yeah.
I never
want
to be apart from you.
Uh-huh.
Support for WABE comes from Emory Executive Education. Professionals and leaders can elevate their business performance and career with the expertise learned in our open enrollment programs. Enrollment for fall courses is now open. More info at worksmarter.org/NPR.
Tonight at 6 on PBA 30, 20 years after Princess Diana's death, this new film reveals her story in her own words. And what emerges is the narrative of a shy young girl who stepped onto the world stage in 1980 and departed in 1997 as its most famous woman. Watch Diana, Her Story, tonight at 6 on PBA 30.
Did you miss today's show? I got you. You can catch up on all the interviews you missed at wabe.org/closerlook. And let me know what you think. Tweet me at WABE Rose Scott or send an email to rose@wabe.org. This is member supported 90.1 WABE Atlanta.
My name is Hawa and I live in Claxton. One thing I like about Claxton is a diversity city, and there's like many other people come from other countries. I have a lot of friends from different backgrounds. Like Claxton feel like to me is like an immigration cellar, like where some people from other country and you get to meet friends and get to know other people from other nation. If I would change anything about Claxton, I would say like about the school where I go, like we have to have a new building and new stuff like this.
Hi, this is Robert Siegel of NPR's All Things Considered, your evening news destination. You know, events unfold throughout the day between Morning Edition and All Things Considered, so tune in for Here and Now with Jeremy Hobson and Robin Young. It's in-depth news, analysis, and extraordinary stories that you won't hear anywhere else.
Monday afternoon at 3 on 90.1 WABE.
And Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's Choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott. Here's what I can tell you about Kimora Hudson. She loves science and wants a career in the medical field. She really likes psychology and neurology or anything dealing with the brain. She's also 13 and taking courses at the University of West Georgia. So you know what's coming next. Joining me now in studio is Kimora and her mom, Fawn Hudson. Thank you both for coming in and taking the time.
Hi, Rose. Thank you for having us.
You know, I just had a chance to speak with Layla Hathaway, and I asked her about, you know, journeys and destination. You're 13. Have you thought about the destination, or are you just enjoying the journey right now?
Well, right now, I am enjoying the journey, but also I am looking at the destination, seeing where this will take me later in life.
You know, here's a quote that I read from you. You said, "You can't be scared to try new things, and you always have to try your best. You never know where it's going to take you. You can't be scared of the small thinking." So that's your approach to taking these college courses at the age of 13?
Yeah, like my parents have always taught me, don't be afraid of small things and stuff. If you want to do something, go out there and do it. And whatever happens, happens.
Mom, Fawn, I read where you noticed something unique or different about Kimora when she was little. You said that she, even doctors said, you know, she's really advanced. When did you start to notice all of this? And, and by this, I mean just something different.
Exactly. When Kimora was a baby and she was going in for her checkups at the doctor, her first word was mom, mama. Mm-hmm. And the doctor said it was an old wives' tale, actually, that babies who say mama before dada tend to have intellectual ability. And we just laughed about it. That was that. Moving on through preschool and different things, when her teachers started saying, wow, we have to bring in extra work for her, we definitely need to put her in gifted courses, I blocked it because I was a gifted child myself, and I had a hard time, you know, going to school in late 80s. You got bullied if you were the smart kid. Mm-hmm. And so I knew what that label held, and I did not want that for my daughter at all. So I blocked it. But by first grade, it was just undeniable. She was in Montessori school, so she got to move at her own pace. And I sat back and said, wow, instead of shrinking down, we're going to rise to the occasion.
Did you talk to her as she got older about your experiences and being the, quote, gifted child? And you said that was a concern for you because you were bullied. Did y'all have that conversation?
I did talk to her, I guess, in an appropriate way, you know, about it's not how smart you are. And so I shifted the energy from the academics, and we worked on things like resilience. We worked on things like your mindset. And she's 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, but teaching her that through this journey, it's going to be a struggle.
How do you have a conversation with a 4-year-old, 5-year-old about shifting their mindset?
I know. I just can't even recall. I would say things like, Kimora, I like how you got that A. However, I want to see an A in the friends you hang around. I want to see A's in how you tackle decisions and different things like that, because I knew she would understand A meant good, but not always an A in academics, but in other areas of life as well.
Kimora, you understood that at an early age?
Yeah, my mom, like both of my parents, they always wanted the best for me. Not, like my mom said, not even academics, my social life and just other things like that. So, yeah.
So along, you're going through the grades and you realize, okay, I'm a little bit more advanced than my peers, but I'm also just being a regular kid. Did you have to balance that? Did your friends ask you, hey, why are you, you know, doing this academically, but, you know, you're still hanging out with us? Did you have those kind of conversations?
Yeah, like once I was in about 4th or 5th grade, I could tell I was very advanced. I would get all 100s, all A's and stuff like that. But I would also be involved in different programs with people who are on my same level. So in programs like that, I would communicate with those people, and it was like normal. But like at school, where I was the top of the top, it was kind of like, oh yeah, she's different. But at the same time, that was more like socially. So it was kind of like separate, I guess, if that makes sense. Like,
sure.
We didn't focus on that, I guess.
And you didn't have any issues with kids bullying you or anything like that, did you?
No, not at all.
Well, that's, better not.
That's great to hear. Mom, let's turn back to you, because as all of this is taking place and you're starting to realize that there is a developmental track here that's going to be different, how did you go about even getting to this part where we are now, where she's 13 and taking some college courses?
Mm-hmm. I think that if you take college out the equation, most parents in the educational setting want their children to be on track, on the level. So I don't look at it as Kimora's in college. I look at it as we got to keep finding the programs that's going to meet her where she is.
What was the program? There were some particular programs that she got involved in, correct?
Yes, Duke TIP was probably one of the first ones. A lot of people know about the Duke program for talented youth, and when we were in that program, they made sure she stayed on level, because by 4th grade she was at an 8th grade level, say. And so what Duke TIP helped us realize was we got to keep her advancing, and when Duke Tip had done all they could do, we moved on to other programs. The program at Vanderbilt University was another one, basically making sure gifted students stay on level and we don't get them backtracked, because it happens all the time.
And that's my next question, because did you all have a conversation? Did you have maybe even an agreement between yourselves that, hey, if you get to a point where this is too much or you don't want to do it, hey, you know what? We go back to the traditional track here for your schooling. Did y'all have that conversation?
Every single time. So nothing is set in stone. You got to give it a try. If it doesn't work out, we can regroup. But it's still something to be had about going back to the traditional route, because really we've gone against the grain from day one. So honestly, I don't even know what it would look like just doing a normal situation. But of course, if she said, look, I want to go to high school, I would say, okay, but when you get in that high school class, the work has to be on your level. If you're learning something that you learned 3-4 years ago, if you're learning the same things over and over again, it's a problem.
So let's get this clear for our listening audience, because you are taking college courses at the university, but you're not a college freshman technically, correct?
Yeah, like I don't stay on campus. I basically, the West Georgia is my high school. I go there to take classes and then I come back. So it's just like, instead of going to a high school, I go to West Georgia and then I come back home and stuff like that.
Yeah. And you got to take out the trash and sweep the front porch and all that. What classes are you taking at the university?
Right now, for my first semester, I'm just taking biology, a biology lab, and public speaking, just to get, like, used to the whole schedule, because it is a big change from going to eighth grade to college and stuff. So, right now I'm just taking those three classes, but as the semesters go on, I'm going to pick up the classes.
And you're also just having some fun like any other regular 13-year-old teenager, correct?
Yeah.
Because you like sports, which, you know, that I love that. What sports do you like?
My favorite sport is swimming. I like to watch football, basketball, stuff like that, because a lot of my friends play basketball, but my favorite sport is swimming.
I like swimming. Now, so you're on track to finish your college courses by what age here? 17, maybe?
Okay, so the way it's set up, one semester of college is 1 year of high school. So realistically, I could graduate from high school in 2 years, but that would be with a full load of classes, so it's no rush or anything like that. So once I graduate high school, which will probably be in 2.5 to 3 years, then I'll have one more or two more years of college left. So by the time I'm probably 18, 19, I'll be done with my getting my bachelor's for college.
Really?
Yes.
That is awesome. Thank you. Excited about that?
Yes, extremely.
I mentioned coming into this segment that you definitely want something in the medical field. Any idea?
I'm still not 100% sure, but like you said, I am very interested in like the human brain and how that works. So just sociology, neurology, psychology, just all that kind of stuff.
How much fun are you having with all this? Because I see you've been smiling since you came into the studio, Kimora.
Yeah, I really enjoy taking these classes, because it's like all of my life, yeah, I have been advanced. I have been in upper level classes, and it's just like, I feel like it's satisfying, I guess you could say. Like, it's not too hard, but it's not like, oh, this is easy. It's a piece of cake. So I feel like it's a good challenge for me.
Mom, she says it's a good challenge for her. Do you worry at all then about if she does maybe get to a point where, you know, she needs a break, and will you just back off and let her control that?
Yes.
Because I know moms.
I know. So it's kind of hard, because I would want to know why, like what happened. Because, you know, when Kimora was growing up, I was a stay-at-home mom. Now I'm a mental health therapist. So obviously that ties into, you know, how I look at her situation. Because I don't want doubt from others seeping into her saying, I can't do it. It would have to be where she literally said, I can't. And I would want to know why. Because she's been on this track for such a long time now, but if she wanted to, definitely. But you got to be challenged. We know with success in life, you can't go the easy route. When you talk to people who've been successful, they talk about those struggles and being resilient and fighting through. And so that's going to be very important.
And there was a lot of press, a lot of media coverage. That's how we found out about this. Is that been, what's that been like? Have you been able to balance coming in and answering the same questions from folks like me. I hope I ask some different questions. I don't know. But have you been able to balance that? What's it been like?
I think it's been pretty good. It's so much to tell because really this whole thing started from birth. Really this whole thing started with me and my experiences. So one thing that I can appreciate, she's goal driven. So she's working on the next thing. And so I don't know if you want to tell them about that part.
What's the next thing?
Okay, so I'm planning on writing an ebook just about this whole entire journey because, like you said, there are a lot of questions. What about this? What about this? What about this? And like you said, coming in and answering all of those questions. So within the next couple of months, I do plan on having an ebook out. I'm writing it right now. And, yeah.
Swimming, writing a book, taking college-level biology and a lab, and what was the other class?
Public speaking.
Public speaking, and then your other stuff that you got going on.
Yes.
How are you going to do all this?
It's all about balance. Like, I'm a Libra, so it's all about balance. But I think setting a schedule is important. Like, 9 o'clock from 10 o'clock, I'm going to do this. Just setting time aside to do certain things so things won't get forgotten or, like, left out, if that makes sense.
Fawn Hudson, what's your message or your advice to parents out there who may be on the same track that you and Kimora have been on since she was little,
mm-hmm.
particularly about balancing and allowing the child to also be a kid?
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I feel that you have to know your child. We have two other kids at home, a 16-year-old and an 8-year-old. Each child is different. You have to know your child, and I would never do anything to hold her back. So if you have a child that's gifted, because again, academics, that's the easy part for a gifted mm-hmm. student. Maturity-wise, may be lacking. So if Kimora wasn't, she's mature for her age and always have been very serious and different things. So when you know your child, it's all about finding the right opportunities for them to leverage. And Kimora just happened to keep going to where I stood back and it went over my head. So just knowing your child, putting them in the right environments, as far as balance goes, you know, I can tell when it's been a lot. Mm-hmm. And so right now she's not swimming actually because this process since being accepted into school, starting classes, that swim schedule would just take things over mm-hmm. the top. So we've listened to her, but her dad let her know it's going to be almost time to get back.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to come in. Kimora, best of luck. I don't even think I need to say that, but best of luck to you and congratulations on all of this. And when you write that ebook, you can come on back. Fawn Hudson, your mom, thank you both for coming in and sharing your story. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Support for WABE comes from the University of Georgia in Gwinnett. You can earn your graduate degree while working full-time. More about UGA's programs for working professionals at the Gwinnett Campus Open House on October 21st, gwinnett.uga.edu. And from Windstorm Productions. Presenting Wilco with guest Margaret Glaspie at the Fox Theater Sunday, October 8th. Tickets on sale now at foxtheater.org and the Fox Theater Ticket Office.
This is Closer Look on 90.1 WABE. Did you miss some of today's interview? Don't worry. Catch each day's show at wabe.org/closerlook. Again, wabe.org/closerlook. Send our host, Rose Scott, an email at rose@wabe.org. There's more Closer Look ahead on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR.
My name is Emily Tomlinson, and I am from Vine City. I study drawing and painting at Georgia State University. I really like living in Vine City because it's really close to public transportation, as well as Georgia State, where I take classes. The growth of gentrification in the area. It's taking a lot of people out of the city, where a lot of their family is from. with the dome and everything. It's very authentic Atlanta. It's, I think, one of the oldest neighborhoods in Atlanta, and it brings a lot of diversity to the city.
On the next Fresh Air, Hillary Clinton. She has a new campaign memoir. We'll talk about candidate and President Trump, chance of lock her up, Russian interference, Comey in the emails. I'll start by sharing with her my takeaway from the part of our previous interview that went viral, the part about how she came to support federal marriage equality. My takeaway is probably not what you think it is. Join us this afternoon at 2 on 90.1 WABE.
And Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott. In August of 2012, Jamaica Evans started a new job as a security guard at the Georgia Regional Hospital in Savannah. Within a year's time, Evans would leave her position at the hospital following claims of physical assault and harassment. After filing a lawsuit against her former employer, Evans' case has made its way through the courts and could now be heading to the U.S. Supreme Court. And there's a whole lot of other stuff that we're going to get into. So join me now to talk more about this case is Jamaica Evans and Simone Bell, Southern Regional Director for Lambda Legal. Lambda Legal is representing Ms. Evans in this case. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Ms. Evans, I want to start with you. You were working at Georgia Regional Hospital. You've been quoted as saying this was a purposeful job. What made it purposeful for you? What was it about working in that position?
Well, what made it purposeful for me was that I had an active role every day with ensuring the safety of those patients and also making sure that the environment, the employees, as well as the patients were safe. So that was important to me.
How would you describe, when you first got there, the environment and your colleagues and coworkers? Everyone pretty cool, pretty much?
Yeah, I remember having a very supportive staff. Initially getting there, it was more about everybody just having each other's back and moving as a solid unit. So,
what happened?
Upon the retirement of a department head, we got a new department head, and that's when my treatment started getting worse.
Tell me about this treatment.
I was physically assaulted, harassed, and denied equal pay and work because of my sexual orientation and because I don't conform to gender norms.
How do you like to be addressed in terms of gender identification?
Well, my pronouns are she, hers. And so I'm more dominant or masculine or aggressive, however you may say it. I'm a lesbian as well, so both of those factors played a role.
You said you were harassed. Can you give me an example?
Just several times a day. Definitely different issues, different accusations, even down to physical assault. So all of those things were included.
And you were ultimately in your position, you were terminated, correct?
Yeah, effectively terminated I was.
What was the reason?
Well, after, going up my chain of command and things not changing, I eventually was put in a position where I had to resign.
Simone Bell, Southern Regional Director for Lambda Legal. Let me bring you into this conversation. How often have you heard stories like this?
Actually, we hear them quite often at Lambda Legal. Employment discrimination is the number one subject that we get calls at Lambda Legal and has been since we have worked for our first employment discrimination case back in the 1970s. So it happens a lot more than people think it does.
And the original lawsuit that was filed, this was based on a sexual orientation discrimination? Was that the basis of that first lawsuit?
Yes, it was. And it the work itself has evolved and changed over the years. We have won cases based on sexual orientation. We've won cases based on gender identity. We have a landmark case that we won here in Georgia, Vandy Beth Glenn, who is a transgender woman who was fired from her job at the Georgia State Capitol. And that particular case solidified the fact that gender identity is covered under the 1964 Civil Rights Act. We've been doing the work around sexual orientation for a long time as well, and because of the court cases, like our Hively case out of Indiana, mm-hmm. where federal court said that sexual orientation discrimination is covered under sex in the Civil Rights Act. And then we have a case that we're in the Second Circuit up in New York that Attorney Greg Nevins will be arguing, mm-hmm. I think sometime next week. So we have a long history of doing this work.
But the district court dismissed Ms. Evans' complaint. And basically the ruling said because, in its view, federal law doesn't protect lesbian, gay, or bisexual employees. Is that the gist of that ruling?
That is the gist of that. And that is why we are petitioning the Supreme Court, because there is a split in circuits. As I stated, we have the Second Circuit who ruled in favor of Kim Hively, who was a woman who was fired from her job at a college campus. We have the case that's in the Second Circuit now that's being heard of a gentleman, Zarda, who was fired from his job out of New York. And so what we feel and what we know it's time to do is for LGBT people to have protections no matter where they live in this country.
Someone listening may say, but how can you prove that Ms. Evans was terminated from her job because of her sexual orientation?
Well, there's case law that's out there, and that's definitely where our attorneys are working from. It's been proven in so many different cases across the country. We know that discrimination exists. As I stated, we get so many calls about it, and that's why it's time for the Supreme Court to weigh in and determine specifically that sexual orientation is covered under sex.
And you're hoping that the Supreme Court hears this, because you actually appealed this to the 11th?
Yes, we did an appeal with
the
11th.
And they declined to even hear it, correct?
Right, they declined to even hear it. And this is how the type of law that we do, which is called impact litigation. We take cases that impact all folks and not just one particular person. So the back and forth through the districts and being appealed and pushed back to a court, this is the normal route that we normally go with doing our particular work. It's a long-term process, but we stay committed to it.
Ms. Evans, when you were terminated, and can you even talk about what it was like? And that was it. I imagine it was emotional for you, stressful, and
absolutely.
Did you want to return to work?
The work itself, I loved. It was my work environment that was the issue, and so. I did. I was very emotional, even before I was terminated. I was very emotional, and it was a very stressful job during that time.
You've since then found other employment, correct?
Yes.
And how is it on this job?
I haven't experienced discrimination, especially not on the level or at all in the form that I did at Georgia Regional.
Now, we did reach out to Georgia Regional, and they did respond by saying they won't comment on pending litigation. Simone, you've been a lawmaker, you're an attorney, so this has been going on for a long time in terms of lawsuits and discrimination. And what is it that could be different about this case you hope that the Supreme Court would hear?
First, a couple of corrections. We want to be clear that Jamaica was forced out of her job. And
what does that mean, forced?
She was put into a situation where it was no longer safe for her to be at that employer, because of her sexual orientation, because of the discrimination that she received.
The threats?
Well, continued harassment and physical assaults, as well as the denial of equal pay and work. Those conditions definitely made it hard for me to continue to safely work at that job.
And so, and then secondly, I just play an attorney on television. I am not an attorney, but I was a lawmaker. Mm-hmm. But my role at Lambda Legal is to make sure that the cases are taken to the people on the ground, to make sure that LGBT people know that we have rights and that we don't have to deal with discrimination as it relates to employees, which is why we have our help desk. We want to know where this is happening, because we know we have the case law that says it is against the law. So that's what we're always looking for. In terms of Jamaica's case, it means a lot. Basically, at the end of the day, what it means is that lesbian, gay, and bisexual people have a right to put a roof over their heads. We have a right to be able to take care of ourselves and our family. And employment is fundamental to that. And in addition to that, doing the work that we choose to do, want to do, and that we're good at is paramount to making sure that we're living our lives fully. If you can't work, you can't pay your bills, you can't take care of yourself.
It's been just a few weeks since you filed your petition with the U.S. Supreme Court. How optimistic are you?
Well, we stay optimistic. We have to get up every day and come and do the work. And so we feel like our complaint is sound. Like I said, we have previous cases that speak to this, and we are excited about the Supreme Court saying that they will hear it. And not only that they will hear it, but that they will make the right decision to protect LGBT people in employment across the United States.
Ms. Evans, as we wrap up, no matter how the courts rule in this case, what do you hope comes out of this in terms of what it might mean for other LGBTQI individuals in the workplace?
I hope that we all can establish an equal work environment. Employment discrimination has been a fight that has been fought for a long time, and I hope that the Supreme Court weighs in and just reiterates the fact that we're already protected and it needs to be stated by them.
Jamaica Evans is the plaintiff in a discrimination case against Georgia Regional Hospital. She's been represented by Lamba Legal, which has recently filed a petition to have the case reviewed by the U.S. Supreme Court. Also joining me in studio, Simone Bell, former lawmaker, now Southern Regional Director for Lamba Legal. Thank you both for coming in and sharing your story. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for always having us, Rose.
Community issues are what drives the conversations here on Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. Tell me what's happening where you live. Send an email to rose@wabe.org. Again, that's rose@wabe.org. This is member supported 90.1 WABE Atlanta.
Where will Amazon deliver 50,000 jobs? Cities and states all over North America are waving their flags, hoping to be the recipient.
Amazon should locate its second headquarters in Aurora, Colorado.
We are keenly interested in having Amazon in Georgia.
All of North Carolina is behind it.
I'm Elsa Chang. Cities compete to house Amazon's offices on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Every weekday afternoon from 4 to 6:30 here on 90.1 WABE.
That's it for today's show. Closer Look is produced by Candace Wheeler, Ebony Lemon, and Finley Foxen. Our engineer is Elizabeth Eads. Our executive producer is Christine Dempsey. As always, a special thanks to the entire WAB News team, as well as our digital services crew, because they keep me on the web, which is probably a good thing. If you missed any of today's show, you can find the entire program at wabe.org/closerlook. And you can now listen to Closer Look weeknights at 9 p.m. We're back tomorrow at 1 for another edition of Closer Look. Stay tuned to 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott.